Support made possible by Strategic Farm Marketing. Strategic's annual series of crop insurance and grain marketing meetings are currently underway across the Midwest. Go to www.sfarmmarketing.com. to register for a meeting near you.
This is the February 6th edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Bill Biederman. He's at agmarket.net out of Spring City, Tennessee. Aaron Curtis from Midco in Bloomington, Illinois is here, as well as Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Aaron and Dan, by the way, will join us for our March 3rd event over at the All Day Ag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. And Bill Biederman's colleague, Matt Bennett, will be there too. You can as well. The cost is just $30. This is March the 3rd at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. And for that $30, 16 analysts for the day. We'll talk about crop insurance, SCO, ARC and PLC decision. We'll have Gary Schnittke there. We'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions. We may even have somebody in from USDA NAS to talk about the reports and, of course, the analyst. And we've got 16 folks that will be on hand. It's a great day. The cost, again, just $30. Visit our website, willag.org, willag.org. Get yourself signed up for the All Day Ag Outlook today. Now, let's turn our attention to the marketplace. And I think I want to get a list, as we have in the past, usually, of items that should be discussed for the afternoon. Bill Biederman, I'll start with you. What do you think should be top of the mind?
Well, top of the mind is going to be the coronavirus and how it affects the economies and the markets and everything else, and how long it'll be an influence on us. And then the second thing, of course, is going to be China and whether they, when they come in, how much they come in, what they come in for, and how long they keep coming in. And that's kind of about the going to be the driver of the market until we're fighting tractors in the field and seeing how many acres they can get in.
Aaron Curtis of Midco, on your list, any other items?
Yeah, piggyback a little bit on what Bill said. I would just wonder, you know, over the next 2 weeks, are we going to know anything more about the Phase 1 trade deal? We have supply-demand report next week. We have tariffs being reduced later next week. That'll be the 30-day, kind of 30 days out from the January 15th signing. And then, of course, the next week after that, we have the USDA Ag Outlook Forum. So between those kind of three marks on the calendar over the next couple weeks, are we going to know any more about what the plan is as far as Phase 1 trade deal and what that means for demand?
Dan Zwicker, I suppose we should talk about the charts. Anything else from you?
Nothing really spectacular on the charts. I guess, you know, my concern or my question is how much corn and how much soybeans are under a basis contract of some kind as we come toward the end of the month that's under a March futures contract. What is going to happen to those and what kind of impact that might have on the futures market as we go into March deliveries.
This next question, and I fall into this category, it's really clear that there are a whole lot of basis contracts on corn that will be coming due at the end of this month. Let's work with 20 under the March futures. What should I do with that?
Well, that's a tough question. I think the smartest thing to do is to, you know, if you believe the market's going to be range-bound, and if you believe the low end of the market is now, there's no sense selling out of the basis contract at this point. I'd just probably roll it. You know, you can roll it to the May or you can go to the July. I mean, if you look at carry, July is probably the smartest move. You know, if you also like to play the delivery game, then going, staying in the March for a little bit longer. I think there's only 68 contracts that are deliverable. And so that's not too many, and maybe there will be a little bit more narrowing of the spread.
Aaron Curtis?
Well, I don't think there's a lot of upside in corn here, at least in the short term. I think if we get back to 390, 395, I think there's probably going to be a lot more interest in pricing some of those contracts, Todd, but I guarantee if we stick around this 380 or below, that the majority of those basis contracts are going to get rolled to the May, because the farmer continues to want to see some higher prices here at this point. So Bill's right. The spread has narrowed in a little bit. We're trading March, May right around 5, 5.25 right now, which is, below full storage carry at this point. So still spreads continuing to reflect the fact that there's not been a lot of producer movement overall, a lot of stuff moving to town via basis contracts or DP at this point. But as far as any pricing, that continues to be mostly nil. So that continues to support spreads, keep basis fairly supported, at least historically. But at this point, if we continue to be range bound, I'm going to assume at this point that the farmer rolls a lot of those basis contracts forward and hope for a better day. Well, today, you'll reflect the spread, so your basis would be reflected by the spread whenever you do it. So, that spread's been pretty tight between 5 and 6 cents here. And then, of course, you also have a service fee that may be applied depending on what elevator you're working with. So that would vary across the Corn Belt at this point. But obviously, there would be some cost in moving that forward. Depending largely, though, on what that spread's doing at the time you do that.
And I'll ask, because you are in an elevator situation with Midco, how many contracts do you think are we looking at?
Well, across the Corn Belt, I mean, it's millions of bushels, right, that have been put in under basis contracts. That's hard to quantify, in a whole picture at this point. But there is, I would say, a higher percentage this year than past years that is on basis contracts. And the basis contracts, even the last couple of years, have been a pretty popular option. Producer, but it's it's millions of bushels across the Corn Belt that have, and a lot of those, the majority of those would be versus the March. So they're here in the next 3 weeks. There'll be some decisions the producer will have to make here, either sell it or roll it forward.
And Dan Zwicker, how do you see these basis contracts moving, and what are your suggestions?
Well, as you know, when you worked for me 30 years ago or 35 years ago, I forget. it's been a while. Remember, I always figured out the cyclicals and kind of said, okay, the cyclicals would indicate we're going up or down. Now, what kind of fundamentals is it going to take for those cyclicals to work? And I guess my cyclicals, the way I'm reading them, is that this market is going to struggle or stay on the defensive as we go on into spring. I think the strongest period or the best pricing opportunities are going to come after June 30th. So the last half, so it's going to be more of a growing season situation, or maybe a big kick up in the kick in of China demand, whatever. So if I was in a basis contract situation we're basically range bound or sideways market, we're kind of at the lower end of that trading range. So I would say, short term, maybe a bounce back into, let's say, 385 to 392 range would be an opportunity to pull the trigger on something like that. Then you could maybe take a look at buying a call option or something to replace that, to maybe get into position to take advantage of any kind of rallies that might come about in the last half of the calendar year, or as Bill mentioned earlier, you could just go ahead and roll that basis contract on into July. I guess I'm kind of more an opinion, take my money, cash it out, then maybe take a look at some kind of option strategy that would put me in position to take advantage of summer or fall price strength.
Yeah, so I can see that. I recall that vividly. So you put the chart down, say, where's this thing going based on the chart, and then you fill the fundamentals in to give it reasons as to why. May doesn't look that good to me as I'm thinking about it at this point. There could be a lot of acres. We'll get to that in a moment that show up in the March contract, and if planters are rolling, that could be pretty tough. The other item that I think, at least I'm pretty sure, and we've had some discussions about this, and I've seen this in the marketplace a couple of times, that is having an impact is are the MFP payments. I know based on the checks that are coming in that they cover the cost for my next year's inputs for soybeans. They're not going to do that for corn, and I only have one crop, and it'll be soybeans coming in. But that gives producers a lot of staying power. Does that make much difference, or have you heard them talk about this very much, that they've got staying power to wait the marketplace out? And if they do, I think you probably have already put this in your thoughts as you were answering the first question, but does it, if they do have the staying power, should they use it? And Bill Biederman, again, I'll start with you.
The biggest problem is going to be the financial side of it. And I think for a lot of folks, depending on where they are, what their operation is, that answer is just down the road a little bit. You know, they got to have a meeting with their bankers. So, you know, that could be an ugly discussion for some, especially where there's multiple families involved in the operation. I mean, honestly, we're doing budgets right now and doing the marketing plans for the upcoming year. And we're seeing $200 to $240 swings between one operation to another. And so I don't think I could answer that question other than to say I think it'll evolve over the next month.
Aaron, any input?
I think it's delayed decision-making. If anything else, Todd, I think it just continues to meet some cash flow needs. And, you know, we're really at the point when we have these, you know, lower to range-bound trades, producers, you know, gets back into that marketing decision-making when, you know, I sell something when I need a bill or I have a bill due, right? And when you have government payments coming in, that delays some of that decision. So I think, you know, overall, we've seen some of that impact over the last couple of years on basis, right? Because we've got some fairly firm basis in some spots. And I think the fact that grain's not moving because of some of that delayed decision-making has a bigger impact on the cash markets, I think, than it does on futures. Because as you can see, right, between what cash is doing, what spreads are doing, there continues to be a disconnect to what futures have been doing. So I think that payments that we've seen on a somewhat regular basis for the last year and a half has some impact on cash movement as far as grain.
Dan Zwicker, Chief Ag Economist for the United States Department of Agriculture, Rob Johansson, is reported by Reuters to have said that the WASDE report due out next week will, and I have to be careful about the way I phrase this, but will incorporate, and it will incorporate, the Phase 1 trade agreement. But because USDA is not privy to what the agreement details are, he does not expect it to have much of an impact, especially when you incorporate the outside influences, including coronavirus and ASF in their swine herd. What do you think next week will look like?
Well, Mike, USDA has not been known to give Trump any breaks. So my guess is very little change in demand. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if USDA lowered demand. But I do agree that, you know, until you know the specifics, and I'm not sure you will ever know the specifics. My guess is some of the wording in that agreement is going to be so broad that you could run a fleet of semis through it, and which I think is good, because I mean, if China is promising to buy X amount of bushels of this and X amount of bushels of that, why would you want to show your hand publicly, especially if it's within in a specific time period? Let's say, you know, by the time this information comes out, that China is expected to buy X amount of millions of tons of grain during the 1920 calendar year, or is it going to be the 1920-21 calendar year? I'm sure it's going to be a wide net. Because I mean, why do you want to show your cards before the bidding starts? So I don't think USDA is going to probably tell us a whole lot. And they've been noted for bearish reports, so they may even lower demand. So, like I said, I'm not very bullish here in the near term. I think I'm still ready. I'm still prepared for some bearish surprises from the USDA as we go all the way into that March 30th report. Scared to death what kind of acres numbers they could throw at us. So I'm not too optimistic on anything coming being bullish unless something would happen in South America that could trigger a rally at this point in time.
Bill Biederman, the details that we do know is that they have said they will buy in calendar year 2020 and that they will buy in calendar year 2021, which effectively means they could make all of the purchases for the new crop or 2020-2021 crop year for corn and soybeans. I suppose the Ag Outlook Forum, which is coming up closer to the end of this month at USDA, this is a big forum they have each and every year where they show some numbers, might give us some indication or more indication, do you think?
Well, I would imagine it will. I mean, you're going to have some very, very smart people there talking about what's going on. I mean, you know, let's face it. I mean, here's the reality. I know everybody talks about how terrible demand is, but here's the facts. You know, this year the world produced 1,110 million metric tons of corn, and it consumed 1,133. So we consumed more than we produced. That's been going on for 4 years now. We've seen a drop in the carryover. China produced 260 million tons, but they consumed 278. They or 279. They used 19 million tons more than what they're producing. So they're going from a self-sufficient scenario 5 years ago, just about, to a situation where they're going to have to become an importer. I mean, you know, they mess with their numbers and they raised all their stocks a few years ago. And now there's news stories out there that are saying they've only got a third of what they're reporting. You know, the same thing happened, if you guys remember, I'll bet Zwicker remembers this. Remember back in the early 80s, they lowered their stocks dramatically, like 20 million ton back then was a lot. And then within 2 years, they were exporting corn. You know, they did something bullish and then exported. Well, here they did something bearish a year ago. And I don't know how they can't become a significant importer. So how much of that? I don't know. I think the U.S. could get 3 to 5 million metric tons of business within the next 12 months. That's my opinion.
Aaron Curtis?
Well, as far as the crop report next week, I think it's interesting that the average guesses are all looking for, you know, corn and bean ending stocks to be lower. I guess I just don't see that. I see that an unchanged number would be pretty likely next week. I think it just continues to set the market up for disappointment when we have these average trade guesses continuing to come out for lower ending stocks, and then the market gets disappointed when the USDA keeps them unchanged. But, you know, as far as the trade deal concern, I think we continue to see these asterisks continue to be highlighted with China continuing to say that they'll buy if market conditions exist. And right now on soybeans, market conditions don't exist. We're considerably higher priced than Brazil right now on a FOB basis all the way out through July. We've seen China out aggressively buying Brazilian soybeans. Here this week, aggressively buying French wheat here this week. But the hope is that we continue to see some sort of movement moving forward. I guess I'm in kind of the same category as Bill. I think it's 4 to 6 million metric tons of corn, dried distillers, grains, and sorghum. And I think sorghum and dried distillers are kind of the two markets that to continue to watch here over this first quarter. Those two markets have obviously dropped off considerably as far as interest from China due to the trade war, and they typically do not move that freely into China as the China continues to want to protect its grain market. So I think if we would see some movement here, at least on the grain side, I'd be looking for sorghum and dried distillers as a market to watch here over the next 3 to 4 months and see if there's some movement there and give us a little more reassurance that China's to their word here on buying U.S. ag commodities. And if you keep in mind that $36.5 billion of ag commodities for 2020 is kind of the goal above that 27 2016 baseline or 12.5 billion above that 2017 baseline number, there's a lot of ag commodities that can get us to that total, and doesn't have to be corn and soybeans. So a lot of moving parts, obviously, to keep track of. But the goal or hope is that between the next couple of weeks, maybe we can shed a little more light on what China's intentions are.
Yeah, an item that has been in the news and probably will continue to be for quite some time is coronavirus and the impact it's having on the Chinese population moving across the planet. In some places here in the United States, there are fewer than 20 cases. I think it's 11 as we speak, but let's go with fewer than 20 based on when you might be listening to this. I'm wondering, Bill, because this was on your list, what impact you think it actually has on the commodity markets?
Well, we've studied this pretty intensely. And in fact, I was earlier in my career, I got to attend a meeting in Washington with scientists and economists talking about a similar situation. And the real problem isn't the rate of contagion or the death rate. I mean, that's all bad and all that stuff. But, you know, obviously it's going to continue to be an emotional thing as long as the rate of contagion continues at the pace it's at. The real problem, though, to the economy is if their transportation shuts down. If here's the example, if the semi driver that takes food to the grocery store in Champaign, Illinois says, I'm not going into that city. I don't want to bring that home to my wife. Then all of a sudden we've got a problem, because at least in the United States, and I don't know what it's like in China, but in the United States at that time, they said grocery stores will empty out within 3 days of transportation coming to a halt. It'll take another 8 to 14 days before food runs out inside the home. And then you have social unrest. So you have to keep that transportation going. And China just said just yesterday that they want to minimize transportation disruptions of food and feed to animals. So they're aware of this and they're working on it. But if they lose control of that, I mean, you can't really force a guy to get in a truck and deliver food. So, you know, there's going to be issues. They also announced some military supported efforts to provide food markets, stuff like that. So they're saying things. That's the scariest part to me. It's not the virus.
There's a couple of factual things to go along with this. Wuhan, which is where the coronavirus originated there, or at least that's the first city, and the one that they have been most concerned about, is the place that they have shut down. It is the most densely populated city in all of China. And the Lunar New Year, which was extended for a full week, that'll be done on the 9th, so just not very far away, was a period in which the Chinese government said, let's shut all businesses down in certain cities. I think I saw that Shanghai clearly asked that they shut businesses down, trying to keep people from being in contact with each other. But coming back to Wuhan, those that are in China know that there is, and for lack of better translation, I think the word they use is a migration out of the city to go to their homes, their childhood homes, over the Lunar New Year. And then there'll be a migration back into the city. So I don't know how many people were able to move out, and whether how many people will come back in, and what that means about the transition and transmission of the virus and how it will actually continue to evolve over time. But I suppose we'll need to cover that. Apple Computers, of course, has Foxconn, a manufacturing facility there. And I made note, because I read a lot of tech stuff, this morning, that Foxconn was shutting down the plant, and that their forecast for growth by Apple was 3 to 5%, and they had cut that forecast for sales on iPhones by 1 to 3%, to 1 to 3% for this year, just based on the shutdown that's happening at the Foxconn plant. So it clearly has an economic implication. And that has implications down the road as well. So some good information, Bill, from you about the way this spreads, and the universities and USDA and the government all keeping track of it as well. Anything else that we ought to cover for the day before I get to a final word from you? I think I've gotten almost everything, or does somebody have other things to add? All right, let's get a final word then. I'll start, Aaron Curtis, with you from Midco in Bloomington, Illinois.
I think in the short term, we continue to see sideways trade, very boring trade. The farmer has been pretty disengaged. We expect that to continue without the absence of any sort of rally. So I think February is going to continue to be Dolesville in terms of market. Continue to watch basis and spread, especially any marketing decisions you have that affects that. But I think in the short term anyway, going to continue to be very quiet as we continue to be non-competitive in the world market and a lot of commodity markets. Demand continues to be a concern without any sort of appreciable Chinese demand business here moving forward. So crop report coming up next week, ag outlook forum. So some things to watch there, but I think the market impact is going to be pretty minimal here moving forward.
Bill Biederman from agmarket.net, your final word?
Well, I think that there's a lot of grain moving on. Right now, we're seeing a lot of EFP activity, not a lot of hedge activity. So my guess is that in a week or two, maybe three, seeing these elevators reaching out for some grain. So I'd make sure that if you've got grain to sell, that you try to negotiate that basis. I think you're in a stronger hand than you have been in the past. Also, just really checking your prices and against your costs and making sure that if you can make some sales that are profitable for next year with all the uncertainties, by all means, try to get your risk balanced with your risk versus your protected bushels balanced a little bit, so your portfolio isn't so one-sided.
And Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting.
Looking forward to coming back to Illinois or Indiana, I guess, to the all-ag banquet. And I guess it'll be here before we know it.
Indeed it will. That's Tuesday, March the 3rd, and Dan Zwicker will be there, along with Aaron Curtis, and Bill Biederman's colleague Matt Bennett will be up on stage too. 16 analysts in total at that all-day ag outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. You can join us. The cost is just $30. You can buy those tickets online at willag.org. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online. Listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like. Again, that's at willag.org. You can find it as a podcast as well in Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, NPR One app, on the Apple Podcast Store, and in Google Play. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our thanks go to our panelists, including Bill Biederman of AgMarket.net out of Spring City, Tennessee, Aaron Curtis from Midco in Bloomington, Illinois, and Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas.